right, cool. What's up?
Gary, please make sure that your clean suit is entirely fastened.
Oh, it's 100% fastened.
No, the butt flap is loose here.
Okay, let me watch the port. Watch the jelly port. Okay.
All right. Yeah. Well, we are all becoming unto Derek. Yeah. No. So with the rise in mobile technology happening right now, the cloud. Innovation and speed to business. My vast estate is getting a little bit too bloated. We need more parts of it to kind of act as a self-sustaining thing. So I have actually contracted a portion of my property out to become a clean room for Intel.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah, it's like a chip fab, you know, where they like grow the silicon and such.
Yeah, but, clean room. Yeah, I know a bunch of people who have done work for Intel living out here. And it is, I'm glad that they're finally branching out to Cincinnati, Ohio.
Yeah, CIO.
What's H-I-O. Round on the ends and high in the middle. Ohio. So this is great. I've always wanted to be in a
See, that's just on the inside of your.
I've always wanted to be in a clean room.
Yeah, that is. See, again, I'm glad that we sealed up your butt flap. So we're trying to get a little bit of
sound to come out of my butthole. So, thank you for clarifying.
Well, no, we're both talking through like the air filter, like respirator things.
A lot of the work I've done with Derek has rearranged my internal organs. So, outdoors are now indoors and vice versa. Like, right, it's been a real, it's like a Benny Hill sketch where they keep going like at the hallway chase kind of thing, except it's like that with my body.
And entomologists call it the wandering butthole syndrome.
Yep.
Yeah.
Ring-a-ding-ding. You never know which one you're going to get. That's what entomologists say.
Yeah. I mean, as opposed to entomologists, which just study cake. But no. So we're trying to get up to speed. We have a lot of kind of like some whoopsies, or what we're calling them. We're going to send these over, and they're going to. We have a kind of a sub factory in Cameroon that makes some cast offs. But I'm going to take some of these chips, and we're going to put them in. I'm just going to pick one at random and put it in this cartridge, and we're going to see what comes out.
Okay.
Yeah. So let's put this into the omnivorous cartridge machine. I studied Derek to make sure that we could make this existing technology. Gary,
don't let Intel poach Derek.
quite literally.
I know that they love bee meat over at Intel.
Well, it's the meat, and then they can actually use the compounds in his chitin to improve to do some dye shrinks. Okay, so let's power the machine on.
Yep. Okay.
It's Space Station Silicon Valley.
I'll say it. Fuck.
Yeah, fuck.
I'll say it. Come at me, bro. I hate everything. If I'm going to do the crime, I may as well do the time. I hate everything. Including this.
Oh, gosh. All it takes is for somebody to think, I remember that. And then I'm just like, Gary comes bursting into the window.
I'm fucking Kool-Aid man of destroying. I'm going to bog all you motherfuckers down and start with this Nintendo 64 game.
Yup.
Look out. Cole, I know you've been living your life free as a bird. Happy as can be until I came along, and now I'm going to drag you down to the pits of fucking hell.
Yeah.
Well, welcome to Space Station Silly Boy Valley.
That's the exact opposite of what you were leading to.
I know. In real life, I'm a goofball. I'm Gary Butterfield.
I'm Cole Ross.
And this is Abject Suffering, the show where we play games, bad games. Like, I don't think this game's very good. It is interesting, though. Interesting games, so you don't have to.
Right. And this week we are playing Space Station Silicon Valley. Why are you doing this to us, Tyler and Flow Snake? Please.
Oh, hey.
Why?
Hey, guys.
Yeah. Tyler says, fun, weird, not too difficult, and not too good or bad. A stroll across mediocrity lane with an oddly out of place humor, coupled with rocket dogs. I loved this one as a child. What was I thinking? Maybe you guys can understand. I mean, just you grew up with a, you're a child and you had an N64. Like, yeah. It's not hard to figure out.
It was really around on the Nintendo 64.
Yeah.
And it's like, so these guys, this is one of the most British things we've done. You know, it's very like DMA Designs, mm-hmm. who were people that were in league with Psygnosis.
Yes.
Stuff made Lemmings, things like that.
Mm-hmm. Would go on to make Grand Theft Auto.
Yes. Which is interesting, mm-hmm. you know, that they did that. And Body Harvest, which we've done for the show. Yes.
Yes. I always get Body Harvest and Blast Corps. Oh, Gary, I buried the lead. This is a raffle winner.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, this is Trent Ament who foisted this on us.
Hey, Trent.
Yeah.
Hopefully you weren't just like, man, they're going to do like a 45 minute examination of why this is so cool. Cause it like, there's not bad ideas in this. I don't like the presentation or how it feels on my hands enough to play it.
Right.
So that's me. Mm-hmm. And it's all, the weird thing about this is it's all like, it's admirable because they are designing around the weaknesses of the Nintendo 64.
Oh, for sure.
Like the character models, which I find like obnoxious. And the way they leaned into it was an answer to the fact that they couldn't do something kind of serious. So they're like, well, let's just make a Wallace and Gromit kind of knockoff look and do that.
Yeah.
Like, more power to you, I guess. Yeah.
And that seems like something that would have been more successful on an actual like CRT. Really?
Yeah, maybe.
Because like looking at it, it's pretty, pretty sharp on an LCD, like in an emulation. And so like getting that fuzz over it, I think that would actually complement a little bit of the simplicity on the models.
Yeah.
And also, like, unlike Buck Bumble, again, this is the N64 Sacred Cow duology, unlike Buck Bumble, this doesn't seem to have, at least from what I saw, any draw-in problems.
Yeah. It does a really good job of giving you a large play space to do your thing in. The characters, whenever you go this simple for characters, and this is a thing that the Rare does all the time, they just all feel like 90s cell phone mascots to me.
Mm.
Like, they just look like crazy frogs or something like that. Like, the dog for this, or like the guy could just be like, come out and be like, you know, text Qualcomm to 1-800 Qual.
Yeah.
To get 100 bonus minutes this month.
It's like, the general who Shaq is working with now.
Yeah.
Which is just the best thing that Shaq is now working with the general.
He's Shaq is whole life. Like, we could do if we ever made this like infinite time, we made our livings doing this, like, I would legitimately do a podcast where it was exploring Shaq's life from mm-hmm. like birth to death.
Mm.
Like, just through research and stuff. Like, we had all that time, like, just, you know, go to the library, find out everything that there is to know about his young life,
mm-hmm.
talk about reading biographies out there. You know, and then look at the basketball games, the important games, but from a perspective of like how he felt about it
at the time.
You know, yeah, like how he felt about it, how it must have like impacted his you know, his soul. Yeah. Things like that. Like, no sports perspective. Like, we don't even have to include who won. Like, just like, you know, yeah. And then he made a really good shot, which I think he really deserved because he's a good person.
Yeah.
And you know.
See that actually bodes or jibes with my approach to sports. Like, I like the human story of sports. You know, I love the Cinderella stories and stuff like that. Like, all that's good. However, I don't know if I want to get that close to the reality of Shaq. Is the thing, you know, like, I don't think that there's going to be any dark stuff there, because he is purely delightful. But like, I think what I like about Shaq is kind of the story that I see written on his big goofy smile.
What if, Cole, I would only counter that, like, I understand that, but what if doing this podcast would result in us meeting him?
Oh, then no question. Like, let's drop everything.
It was legitimately just like, hey, you know, because the guys who do you're talking you two to me got to meet you too because of the podcast. Like, if his publicist was like, hey, Shaq, I know this is weird. There's two guys who don't like basketball.
But love you.
Yeah, who just absolutely love you. And I've done like 30 episodes chronicling your life. You know, you're going to be in town, like, what if we gave him some tickets and you got to hang out with you in the green room or something like that.
Yeah.
And then we just get a picture of him like bench pressing both of us and it becomes our profile pictures for the rest of our lives.
Oh yeah.
It becomes the cover art for Bonfireside Chat. Like, it literally just becomes the duck feet image.
Yep.
It's like Shaq bench pressing us smiling and him smiling and just being like, like Return to the Womb.
So I don't know what it is about the 3 years that we've been doing this show, but like over the course of that, you know, just like there's a handful of like celebrities and artists that I would like to meet, but like if anybody could actually make a Shaq meeting happen, like if we can exercise some six degree stuff, I want that to happen. Like I desperately want to meet Shaq, and this is even just like divorced from, say, like the whole like, oh, please adopt us meme. Like,
yeah,
I listen to Shaq radio like when he goes live. I do.
It is I want to meet Shaq more than I want to meet Josh Groban, because I can explain my love for Shaq easier than I can explain whatever my relationship is with Josh Groban. Like, that would be much harder. And I don't want to meet Macy Gray, because I'd have to be like, oh yeah, I wrote a bunch of songs about you eating dogs in a junkyard. like that would make that really tough. So, but Shaq is, as far as people we've had up there, you know, it's like him and really just him. He's at the top.
It really is. But like it's not ironic. I love Shaq.
Yeah, he's a wonderful man.
Yeah.
So Space Station Silicon Valley. This is a game I only knew by reputation, and everything I thought I knew about it, I was actually thinking of Body Harvest.
Everything I thought about it, I was actually thinking of Jet Force Gemini.
Yeah, okay. Perfect. Like, because that's just the slurry of Nintendo 64 games. Like, just and what this actually is pretty interesting.
I dig it.
If you put aside the presentation and kind of how it feels in your hands, I think it's pretty interesting.
Right. So the idea is there's this whole setup with like the space station Silicon Valley.
We'll get into that. Yeah. Let's put an asterisk next to that.
Yes. So for the play, you're playing as like this tiny little like microchip bug that can like inhabit the bodies of these kind of robot animals that are prowling around the space station Silicon Valley. So you are using the individual kind of like abilities of these things in order to kind of satisfy the mandates and dictates of your master.
Yes. So you go solve puzzles by taking over these animals, which is cool. You get different verb set. Can I do a little segment I like to call Hardcore Gaming 101 Said It Worst?
Sure.
I don't know if you've read the Hardcore Gaming 101 article on this.
I never considered that I might have one.
It's really recent. It is bad. It is. I've never read anything. So Hardcore Gaming 101 is a fairly like they write about things that are they take a approach similar to what I think that we do on WAF, where it's like they look back at things and they treat them as they are. Like they're maybe a little bit more nostalgia or a little bit more like lenient.
Well, I mean, they don't have somebody on staff who just hates everything.
Oh, that's true. Like, and eventually, well, I mean, I'll get to them though, because I'm infecting everything.
Right.
And once I start, stop eating your joy, I'll start eating your gods. So, but I haven't gotten to Hardcore Gaming 101 yet. So they don't have me to bring down the general like level of enjoyment. But they're usually pretty like nice. But this guy who wrote this thing is so in love with Space Station Silicon Valley that the amount of hyperbole is through the goddamn roof. So in the opening thing, he's talking about that mechanic. And he's talking about, you know, how rich the catalog is in Nintendo 64, how it has no equal and stuff, which is like, but then moves on to this mechanic. He says, body possession in games is a fantastic, though underused mechanic. Basic concept is that you're able to take control of your enemies, blah, blah, blah. In the right hands, it should make use of multiple design sensibilities. Okay, here's where you get to the good part. So sublime are the possibilities that describing this as a mere mechanic undervalues it. It really deserves to be regarded as a full-blown genre, encompassing multiple genre subtitles, sitting alongside classifications such as MMOs, Kusagi, and shoot-em-ups. That's pretty crazy, right? That's a weird thing to say that body possession should be a genre.
Yeah, it's interesting.
That's a genre like when I used to read text porn. Like if you go read like Literotica, body possession is a tag on that.
Yeah. You're right, and I wonder how much of that. And you know, I'm not gonna. I'm not gonna cast that net on anybody. But like, is Kusoki is that a genre? I thought that was like a classification that was applied after the fact.
It's not a genre now.
Yeah, that's bizarre. Because like, it's something like I can't name a lot of other examples of it. Like, you know, we had like Haunting starring Polterguy, and there's that Euphoria game that we almost did. That's a little bit similar.
Omicron.
What's that?
Omicron the Nomad Soul.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah. There we go. Like a bunch of that stuff, like there's meat to be found there. But yeah, that is without basis, calling it a genre.
Later on,
or calling
talks
it
about,
sublime, even.
Yeah. Yeah. It is not. He's so impressed by things that other games do that are so amazing. Like he's talking about this thing. So after completing a few levels in any given zone, you can move on to play the first level of the next zone. So that the game's overall halfway mark, you have access to all four zones. The opportunity to play levels from later zones is only in the Nintendo 64 release and elevates this from being an already excellent platformer to sublime brilliance. It may seem trivial, but this is really the best design, really one of the best design decisions that could ever have been made. Are you like, you're just giving it like this Mega Man, like just like being able to switch to different levels and play it non-linearly is not impressive.
No,
dude, like what is going on?
That feels like something that would have been edited.
Yeah, like this feels like this needed to be like somebody could have just been toned back, because like you can like a game, right? Like
that's a little.
Well, I mean, I can't. Well, I mean, you.
Okay.
What is the most positive we've ever been on WoF?
Shadow of the Colossus.
Shadow of the Colossus is way up there, right? Were we just like, you know, the fact that you can aim the camera takes this from a sublime masterpiece to the greatest of all game design decisions in the world? You know, like it makes me not want to take this guy seriously at all or anything he says.
I mean, at one point during that episode, and I had to cut this out because of the electrical interference, I started floating and the entire room hummed, and then just like jets of light burst out of like my mouth and my eyes and my nose, basically every pore as the heavenly just exuberance used me as its font to escape into the mortal realm and bring joy to all around us.
When we were practicing that or preparing for that episode,
we were practicing.
Yeah, we had to get it right. So we did a couple dry runs at recording it.
I just couldn't just to make sure, I couldn't get, you know, the color right on the light that spewed forth from me.
And we had to make sure that we said everything correctly. I also doubled up on my kegels because I've been to do that game, I had to practice some reverse tantra. To keep it dry while we record it.
It's a little bit like Tuvan throat singing or circular breathing to play didgeridoo.
Yeah.
Yeah, just like continuous coming is
going back and forth. You just kick it back. You sound yourself with the fucking salty straw. Like, no thanks, dude.
Well, no, I just... The way that you said that, it made it sound like we were like lining up for a twin jet situation.
No, I was just holding it back.
Yeah.
Like so I could simultaneously orgasm during the entire thing because it is such a sublime display of brilliance.
But because there's a sword.
Yeah, exactly. The choice to allow you to use your sword was I mean, there are good design choices in that too, but it is such I've never read like a piece of writing this like obsequious, like this falling over itself to slob a knob. Like, it's pretty crazy.
Yeah, it definitely sells past the clothes.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Or just like sell something with, I don't even know like what to actually say that is. But like, I don't know. It feels like this is definitely, again, like Buck Bumble, something that somebody who is younger than us would really like be into, maybe.
I can see if you came across this at the right time, it just being mind blowing to you, because like, it's not violent, like for the most part. Like, you do a lot of, like, you can do violence, but they're all robots and like you're solving puzzles. So it has that, like, you know, it's not just a shooter.
Yeah.
Which I would have gone crazy for when I was young.
And if this was somebody's first exposure to British humor, you know, like that kind of stuff, I could see that. And if they were like disposed to like that kind of thing, that would probably be be another thing too that would make it stick out.
Yeah. And the weird thing is I self-identify as somebody who does like British humor, but I think that the attitude and stuff presented by this game is really annoying.
Yeah.
I think I find the humor really obnoxious.
Mm-hmm. Well, also it's a little bit weird to say, like, you know, that it can be pretty wide and diverse. I think we're talking, like, when I say I'm referring to.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah. Like, it's not, everybody likes British humor. You know, they're constantly talking about L.A.G. and Ricky Gervais and Wallace and Gromit. And Monty Python.
So, calling this just like, hey, this represents the humor of an entire country, but like, it's the way it's described, right, in the articles and stuff, and it does have like the whole "oh bother" kind of thing to it.
Yeah, I don't think that this is representative of it. It's just it's it is a kind of humor that does happen to be British. Yes. It does not encapsulate all British humor by any means. And that humor is very specifically Wallace and Gromit kind of focused, which I kind of miss the train on that. Like, all my friends are really into it, and I can appreciate it. It's cute. But it doesn't, it's not a laugh riot for me. The presentation is like way sloppier with it though.
Yeah.
Like, the characters don't look as good, which of course they don't.
Right.
And it wasn't helped by the fact that when I played it, there was some kind of glitch because the Nintendo 64 emulation is somehow not perfect.
You got this too. Oh my gosh.
Everything floats in a black void.
Yep. And then in the interstitials, the nerdy superhero turns into a fractal.
It's really weird. Yeah, it makes the whole thing like a bewildering nightmare. And for a little while, I was like, the entire time between when I played it and I watched the opening on YouTube, I was savoring the possibility that that was how it was supposed to be, because it was like delightfully unpredictable.
Yeah. It's like, oh gosh, he's just like, is he flying an invisible like ship? Is that how they get around rendering a ship?
were we supposed to be... And watching it made it sense, but like, are we supposed to be sad that we stopped this dog from fucking a sheep?
Gary, it seemed like true love.
Yeah. But that's still weird. I don't know.
How else do you think sheepdogs are made?
That's true.
Yeah.
To herd them, I must become them. The gags come, like, there's no sense, like, things that switch from kind of scene to scene. Mm-hmm. For jokes, there's usually kind of more artistry to it than this. So this was just kind of discombobulating, as opposed to these like smash cuts to different things, like back to the ship and then back to the planet. It, even when I watched it with the backgrounds, it didn't feel cinematic. It just felt confusing and fast.
Yeah.
You know, weren't doing a good job of establishing place or establishing anything, really. It starts out with a really boring newscast that just kind of says what things are.
Yeah.
Just tells you, and then we immediately are on a spaceship. With characters we don't really understand, Dan Danger and that robot.
Evo is its name.
Evo, yeah.
The evolving robot. And so, like, I can give a lot of notes about, like, what could make this more interesting to me. And in fact, I'm going to do that. So,
it's really easy to sit back and Monday morning quarterback. So let's do it. It's easy and fun.
Yep. But
I didn't get into this for a challenge.
This may be the case, like what happens later, but I was really hoping for like a Katamari curve where like, oh, you need to like inhabit like this size class of animal to like get to this other size class. But instead, like, it just felt kind of like aimless to me what it was asking to hop between. Yeah. And like, that's the other thing too. Like, the majority of this game is empty space, and that space is not used to any effect. Like, it's just my little dog, and I like the walking animation for like the dogs and the sheep, where it's like dig 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 dig, like that, like the like little like ineffectual like things. But you're moving so slow.
It feels very floaty.
Yeah.
I think that if I had to give it one of these notes as well, I would say that the puzzles that I solved in the brief amount that I played were reliant on like the physics engine and the control and the kind of the game feel part, which was at its worst. So like early on, after you do the kind of very first mission, you do one where you have to herd these sheep, and they're pretty fast. So it tells you to go find a rat with wheels. You go find the rat with wheels, and you can herd the sheep with this rat with wheels, but it's reliant on like the controls of the rat with wheels and the camera controls, like neither of which are good.
No.
And then the fact that the trade-off for getting this additional speed, which is almost too fast, is that you can't land in water, or you will die and not be able to climb out of water at any number of gradients of that it looks like you should be able to do. And you can't jump when you're in water.
Right.
Which is, that is a weird kind of, we've always just allowed people to jump out of water in video games. Mm-hmm. Of course, it makes no sense. There's nothing for you to really push off of, but it's such a nice ease of use consideration.
Mm-hmm.
And just every time the rat, like I was like trying to get one of these sheep into the pen and then would like go back to get another sheep, take way too wide of a turn because I'm mega fast, fall in the river, then have to crawl swim all the way while my health depleted to the section of shore that was shallow enough to get out of, drove me nuts.
Yeah.
Like, the puzzles are reliant on an action game kind of feel and kinesthetics that aren't there.
Yeah.
I think
it felt like I was playing like a debug kind of thing. Like, this doesn't feel like we talk about like how polish isn't the end of everything, but like the feel of it is just so insubstantial.
Game feel is not polish.
Right.
Like, game feel is a core thing that has to work for a game to work.
Right.
You know, that's a foundation. And then once that works, then you move on to those other things are polish. This almost feels like it has polish because of like the impressive draw distance and kind of the wide variety of creatures, but they skipped a step in making it feel adequate to control. at least from my perspective, like, I'm sure there are people who don't have that problem with this at all.
Right. Right.
But I really had that problem with it.
I have like really, really similar problems with a lot of 3D N64 stuff. Like, and that me just too. Kind of blends to our general dismissal of that platform, or at least for me, just kind of like nothing on it really feels that good. And I had like an N64, like the thing came out when I was like in third grade, but like,
which is the prime time.
Oh, I know. Right. But it just ended up being like, it ended up being like a Mario 64 GoldenEye Zelda machine. And like, I never ventured off to the side. It was always my friends who had that, but it's like, why are we not playing Mario 64 GoldenEye or Zelda?
Like something that really works for it.
Yeah. Mario Kart. Just proving that I was always like just a little pretentious shit.
Well, I mean, you're right though. Like, because you can judge, like, we had, in the Slack, and this was less boring than it sounds, because it sounds like a really tedious thing to discuss, but we were kind of like ranking or grading systems. Mm-hmm. We were talking about system libraries and how good they are, because I was somehow the Dreamcast came up, which I think is a weird system that gets a lot of credit for having a good library, when I don't think it's that much better than the Nintendo 64 library, which I don't think is very good. You know, like, there are fun games on it, but there's only a handful. We were talking about that stuff, and there's something to be said for a game like a systems, like middle tier games,
right,
as kind of a metric for how good it is.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like the kind of games that are like in this level, or like, I'm sure Blast Corps or Jeff Force Gemini are in these just kind of shitty almost games,
mm-hmm,
that almost are good. And like what quality those are and what kind of things they have in common are going to be indicative of like problems with the system in general.
And like that comes along with third party support too, really.
Yeah.
Like that's one thing that makes like the PS2 like such an exceedingly successful thing. Like,
yeah, that's the best.
Yeah, like you look at the mid tier PS2, you have like PsyOps, you know.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, absolutely. Like some of the mid tier PS2 games are some of the best games,
right?
You know, or like not best, but like are games I really like.
Yeah.
And it's not an age thing. I don't feel like, because I wasn't a kid when I played that, I was just an adult.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know, so I mean, it was an age thing in that I was more discerning, but it wasn't an age thing as if I have like tons of nostalgia for PS2 era games.
Right.
It's just like, oh, I'll play Project Snowblind. No, this is pretty good.
Yeah.
You know, I'll play 13.
Yeah. Cold Fear. Please. Yeah.
Pretty good. Like, you know, it's like those middling weird little side titles,
mm-hmm,
actually, like, because they had enough third party support for those developers to get their feet under them.
Yeah.
And Nintendo 64 or Dreamcast doesn't feel like that to me.
Yeah. What's weird is I think that, you know, and just any actual scrutiny could probably prove this kind of like generalization wrong. What's weird is like on the N64, I feel like a lot of the stuff, like this almost feels like a diversion from that. You get stuff that is like Buck Bumble, that is like a genre piece of like a very distinct kind of mechanic, or you have like weird racing things like Iggy's Wrecking Balls or something like that.
Yeah.
You know, just like the middle of stuff that like is actually like genres that we see like really represented today, mm-hmm, or you know, or like even that we like look back on like really fondly is pretty thin.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah. And as much as this puzzle game that has this body swapping thing is unique, and I think a good game could be made,
mm-hmm,
with this mechanic, and I'll even give this a small bit of credit that I haven't seen it done really.
Yeah.
So like, I can't think of a game where it's like, oh, you just take a bunch of different animal forms and they can be used to solve puzzles.
Mm-hmm.
I haven't really seen that done. So it's like, there's a nugget of something here that I would have responded to when I was young. Yeah. It kind of reminds me a little bit of like EVO, just to draw a comparison. The names are similar, but that I hit that when I was a kid and I was just so blown away by the originality of it that I still like that game a lot. It has a lot of charm for me, even though like, hey, there's no invincibility frames after you get hit. It makes it like a save state nightmare to actually like play with modern hands, even though I still like that game.
Yeah.
But it's just like, I understand giving something in your youth that was very original, giving it inflated credit.
Yeah,
but I found this not very fun to play at all.
Yeah, I'll even do that. I think that, you know, just I'm willing to extend a lot of credit for like a good idea.
You
know, like that is a perfectly valid metric on which to like at least to like start with something.
Yeah,
you know, at least start when talking about a game, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
But this was for me was not that,
right? Like,
not enough to actually play.
Yeah, this is a game that I like just entirely existed in the pages of GamePro to me.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I had that going on as well.
Yeah.
It is, man. That was a fun time though. Like when you would just have games. I used to because we're gonna record the Day of the Tentacle Watch Out for Fireballs, and that was something that I followed magazine coverage for, and just like read the like magazine guide to it over and over and over and over, like ridiculous number of times.
Old Nintendo powers. I played the first two thirds or the first third of Chrono Trigger over and over just by reading that guide in the, like that was, you know, and it's weird, but like, I don't know, like now everybody just watches, like I'll just watch a video of this thing before it comes out and, you know, it's the first hour of the thing. Okay, fine. Like, I, you know, our experience is not relevant anymore and perhaps never was relevant. So, so it's hard. Like, I feel shitty being like romanticizing it, but it was a good time, like, to get that.
Yeah, it is. And I imagine like that nostalgia, I don't feel that bad invoking it because that's the kind of thing that people who played this probably had as well.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like people, if you like this, you are old enough to have played it when you were super young, I think.
Yeah. Yeah. This like this at least would have been like a Blockbuster rental.
It is. It is a Blockbuster game as far as reviews and stuff. This is a really, really well considered game.
Yes.
People really like this. It's like an 83 on Metacritic, which is very rare for a non-Nintendo published Nintendo 64 game. And then the user reviews on GameFAQs are just like lots of fours and fives. Like people are way into this shit.
Yeah. Which, again, I can see.
Yeah.
Like, even if I don't feel it, I can see it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I have that same feeling.
Yeah. It's hard because like there's not that much like I'm trying to find a nug here. You know, like like a digression nug, but like it really is like emblematic and possibly one of the better examples of like a third party, like, you know, good idea, but sub competent execution.
I mean, even the GameFAQs cold is not quite good enough. Like the part where he talks about not no one stealing his thing, he specifically calls out people trying to barter using it. So that's at least a little bit good, but like there's just not that much to it, you know.
That's pretty good. I like that.
I like that too.
only I can get chicken and corn off of this.
Yeah, off of this GameFAQs. Well, in exchange for a small amount of grain and a mortar and pestle, I will write you a FAQ for Space Station Silicon Valley.
One of these at the end, like he like summarized at the end, so many games, so many guides. I'm overwhelmed.
Buddy, it's okay. You can walk away at any time.
Yeah. Like, you're not like, is this like a Quantum Leap kind of thing where he has to like hope that the next fact is the fact?
Oh my God. GameFAQs Quantum Leap.
Yeah.
Like you leap into like new games where you have to write the guide to get out.
Yep.
Oh man. That's good. Yeah. I'm kind of out of things to say about Space Station Silicon Valley, is a bummer because it's interesting. It's just not interesting in an abject suffering way.
Yeah.
I mean, hopefully it's been a good episode as far as just kind of explaining why we don't like it.
Yeah. It's just, so it's weird because N64 stuff comes up so infrequently, that like every time it does happen, like it kind of becomes a referendum on the system itself.
Yeah.
Which
it's not a system that I have that much affection for or that much goodwill for. Like the games on it that are good.
Yeah.
You know, but it's in that Dreamcast GameCube tier.
Yeah.
Just like, oh, there's some stuff.
GameCube.
Yeah. GameCube, I have a lot of like Resident Evil 4 and Resident Evil Remake and stuff. And like, there's like better games. Like I like Resident Evil 4 more than I like every game on Nintendo 64.
Yeah. Well, I mean,
so it is like, I don't think it reaches those highs or anything like that. And I don't know. It is getting that ranking thing is probably not worth it, but it is that weird, those weird middle tier systems that like, there's just, I cannot not read amazing affection for people just absolutely love.
Yeah.
Not like I don't understand it. I get it. It's just, I don't feel it.
This marshmallow guy, which is his name. He is an N64 machine.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like everything here. He did Blast Corps, Body Harvest, Banjo-Kazooie, Bomberman 64, Bomberman Hero, Mission Impossible.
Ooh, all the mid-tier, like
Mystical Ninja Star and Goemon, which I like that game.
I'll give it a shot. I played the prequel to it on Super Nintendo.
Oh gosh, I love that. I love that SNES one too. It's so good.
That's the one I played. I haven't played the Nintendo 64 one.
Yeah,
but I remember liking the SNES one.
Yeah, the SNES one would be like a good if we did like paired that with a River City Ransom for like co-op brawler kind of stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, we can tell we need to end this episode because we're just planning future games that we want to play more.
Yep, I think so. So thank you everybody for listening. If you want stuff that's similar to this, we have a whole network, duckfeed.tv. We just, if you're interested in our show about video game adaptations, that just dropped on our store. If you're not of the Patreon tier, that's called Adaptation Decay. And the first episode is about the Resident Evil movie.
Yeah. Yeah, which is not a very good adaptation of Resident Evil.
Right.
But, you know, now we get to tell you why. If you want that, and that's you can get a lot of different things, though, from patrons. So you can buy that from the store. You can also, if you become a patron at a high level, you just get those episodes when they come out.
Yep.
You know, bonus shows per month. You can also, at a lower level, you can get a bonus episode of this show per month. Lots of things. We're very, very grateful that people decided to support us financially and want to make that very worth it.
Right.
So, if you go to patreon.com/duckfeedtv, you can see the ways that we're trying to do that and decide if that's what we have on offer is valuable to you.
Yeah.
But of course, we appreciate it if you take a look.
Yeah. We also appreciate if you share us or if you, check us out on Facebook or leave a rating or review on iTunes.
Absolutely. Yeah. All those things are appreciated. What's not appreciated is can we just end this with the Buck Bumble theme?
I suppose. I
just saw a picture of him out of the corner of my eye, and I was just like, oh yeah, Bumble.
Before we do that, I'd like to thank Trent. What's funny is Trent requested two games. He was like, oh, you know, because when I ask people for their choice, I say like, hey, can you give me them, like, give me your first and second in case we can't run your first. That way, you know, just it reduces back and forth. His first choice was Space Station Silicon Valley. His second choice was Buck Bumble. So he got a twofer. Like, Buck Bumble was already on the docket and was there months ago.
That's awesome. Yeah. Go Trent. good choice.
All-star.
Absolutely.
But yeah, let's just go ahead and end this with Buck Bumble.
Okay. Bump to the bump to the bump to the base. Bump to the bump to the bump. Bump to the bump to the bump to the base. Bump to the bump to the bump. Bump to the bump to the bump to the base. Bump to the bump to the bump. Bump to the boot to the boot to the boot boot. Bump to the base of the base base. Bump to the boot to the boot to the boot. Bump to the base of the base base. Phenomenal man. Phenomenal man. Bump to the boot to the bump to the base.